All right, everybody, and we are back here on the Fighters Block. My name is Joe Gilpin, joined as always by Jesse Rivas. How are you doing this week, Jesse?
Doing it. I'm excited. There's nothing that gets me more pumped than a heavyweight championship fight, and we got a big one coming up this weekend. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good, man. Let's get right into it. So Deontay Wilder is taking on Luis Ortiz this weekend. This is a rematch of their first fight that saw Luis Ortiz do really well up front, be very physically imposing up front, show good technique up front. But Deontay Wilder does what Deontay Wilder does, and he had a lot of power on the back end and managed to pick up the knockout win over Luis Ortiz in, I think, the 11th. It was an incredible knockout win. It was really something, one of the highlights of Deontay's career. And now they're going to rematch. 2019 has been a cursed year for heavyweights. Is that going to continue?
This is a very dangerous fight for Deontay Wilder. I mean, he did say something very important, though. He said, when you fight him, you have to be perfect for 12 rounds. He just needs to be perfect for 30 seconds. Do you think he's putting too much stock in his punch power?
I mean, he's kind of proven that, though. You know, any of his fights, he's nearly perfect. You know, everybody he walks in there with at least hits the canvas, if not is completely knocked unconscious. We haven't seen this in a long, long time, a heavyweight with this kind of power at the elite levels. And he's got the ability to land it. He's got an amateur career.
Did you know that he has, statistically, the best punch power in heavyweight history?
No shit. Is that true?
Yeah, he has a 95% KO ratio. The next closest is 88%.
Who's that, like Foreman?
I don't know who the second is, but
up there, right? Yeah. But when you consider all the heavy hitters throughout heavyweight history, that's unbelievable. Deontay Wilder is a completely different kind of person. Luis Ortiz, on the other hand, where's he sitting coming into this? He's an older cat. I feel like we don't know his exact age, even though
people say he's closer to 50.
I think he's closer to 50, too. I think so, too. Because black don't crack, and he is cracked as fuck. So I'm only left to believe that he is, he's like one of the forever.
I heard that they do a lot to hide his age, like, for example, when he first came over.
What, like, guyliner? What the fuck are you talking about?
Like, when you see him, he looks freakishly smooth in the face. Like, they really try to make sure that they wax all the facial hair because it's gray. Painted, so you can't see the grays coming in. Like, he looks awkward. Like, it doesn't look like it's, like, it looks like when they try to get, like,
he looks shiny like a California raisin is what I'm hearing.
It looks like when they try to sneak in a Dominican man to play in, like, the junior leagues, like the Pee Wee Championships.
Oh, that's hilarious. Man, yeah, I guess if anybody knows, it would be them. right? They know all the tricks. They know all the secrets. So, looking at this fight, do you have any reason to believe this fight is going to be different than the first? Can Luis Ortiz maintain what he did in the first fight all the way through 12 rounds?
Luis Ortiz is a sad story for me. He's a sad story because when he came in, he had all this great amateur background. He had this hype, and literally nobody fought him. Nobody fought him for the majority of his prime. He started slowing down. I started noticing that after the Coyote fight, he started slowing down a bit in spurts. And that's when you started seeing guys like Brian Jennings and Tony Tompkins, Malik Scott, and then eventually Deontay Wilder fight him. I feel like we did lose the best of him.
It's kind of like, he's kind of like the story of the male prostate, right? Like, by the time you get into the 40s, it's just like, you can only go in spurts, you're into the MILF class, right? When you try to get in with the younger bucks, you really get blown out of the water. Yeah, you just don't have the stamina. I think that even though 2019 has been especially cursed for heavyweights, when you look at, like, the, like, big three heading into the year, Anthony Joshua lost, Tyson Fury had a lot of issues.
Very close to losing.
Very close to losing. Probably should have lost, right? You know, if we're being honest about that cut. And is he going to be able to escape? I sure hope he does. I think it keeps the heavyweight division a lot more interesting. So that's what I'm going to back.
Luis Ortiz has a very interesting mindset going into this fight because he goes in there knowing that he was not perfect for just 30 seconds, but he was winning the fight. He was leading the fight. He actually hurt Deontay Wilder in the 7th round. Do you remember that? Very dramatic 7th round.
Yeah, he looked amazing in the whole fight. But, I mean, that's got to fuck with you so much to be doing so amazing and then still get shot blocked like that.
Yeah.
To the stank.
And you got to think about it, too. Like, this is kind of like Yoel Romero versus Whitaker, too. This is a guy who came in there feeling like, I made a hiccup. I could do way better the rematch. So the adjustments he's got to make, there's the stuff he's been talking the good talk to get into this fight. And Deontay Wilder, because they have that connection of having both kids with disabilities, and he wants to make sure that he takes...
You make it sound like they have it with the same woman or something.
No, but I mean, he understands the hustle. He was like, okay, you came to America because you needed to get better care for your kid. I became a boxer.
Yeah.
Will the kindness be his weakness in this fight?
We're going to find out. What's your prediction?
I predict Deontay Wilder winning. I think it's what's best.
A split decision. I think it was a split decision. Yeah. It might be a unanimous decision to Jan Błachowicz in a horrible UFC main event. It's really, there's no more pretending that Jacare is world class at this point. You know what I mean? He's not elite anymore, we have to say. And a couple of years ago, around like 2014, we were saying that we had such a gluttony of great, great all-time middleweights. And it just kind of turns into one of those guys gets shoveled off to the side, and Jacare is never even going to get a world title shot, I believe, when all is said and done. Isn't that incredible?
We should make a list. We should do that since we're calming down a little bit for the winter, of who are the greatest fighters never to be world champion.
Never to be world champion, man. Never to even get a title shot. I think number one has got to be Jacare. I cannot think of anybody at a higher. You know, I feel like there would be like a huge blinking red light if somebody was even bigger. Like Joseph Benavidez got a title shot. I think he got two.
He's up there for one of the best fighters never to be world champ.
He is. He for sure is. And right now, Henry Cejudo is not eager to let him cross his name off that list. Man, Jan Błachowicz picks up the big win. Absolutely nothing happens in this fight. I think Jacare threw less than 50 strikes the entire fight. Didn't hit the ground at all, by the way. It wasn't like a, you know, positional battle. It was really horrible. Jan did himself no favors in terms of the John Jones sweepstakes. If I was the UFC, here's what I would do. I would put Corey Anderson in there with John Jones, because Corey's never going to get hotter, and at least you burn a fight, right? Yeah. I would put Dominic Reyes in with Shogun, who had a draw in the co-main event, and let Dominic Reyes just smash out Shogun first round, right? Or however he does it. And then just be like, oh, John Jones did the same thing, and now, you know, he's on the same trajectory, and build that story. And Jan's going to have to find something else to do. I'm sorry. You were so boring against a 40-year-old Jacare here.
Put him in Poland. He's a huge draw over there.
Man, he's going to have to find somebody. I don't know off the top of my head. He did like an OSP numbers or something. In Poland. Did he really?
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. Jan Błachowicz, man. He could be something, but he was not something in this fight.
If you look at his record, he's beaten a lot of legends. Like, they really flew in a lot of people in KSW for him.
Man, he's. I feel like he's been, like, the cleaner. You know what I mean? Yeah. He kind of is. He should lean into that.
It kind of goes back to that Ben Askren thing. When you're like the king outside of the UFC, it doesn't really mean anything until you do it in the UFC.
Man, let's move on to that. Ben Askren retired today.
Yeah.
That's such a bummer. He cites hip injury. He needs the hip replacement. He's been competing like a motherfucker since he was a kid. You know what I mean? And so he's an older guy. He was never going to make it to the top of the UFC at this point with two, you know, a 1-2 record. And, you know, one foot in the grave, another on banana peel. His career retired. Man, good for Ben Askren.
Good for Ben.
At least he got to the UFC.
At least he broke a record in the UFC.
What was the record? Oh,
fastest knockout.
Man, up to the Olympics. Yeah, he's on that Baba O'Reilly video forever. You know what I mean? The one they air before all the events. Man, let's take a look at what else happened this weekend, right? So, there's been talk and rumors of Errol Spence retiring. What have you heard?
I've heard so many whispers. It keeps leaking. It pops up on my news feed every now and then, but I can't get it from a credible source. I'm still waiting for an ESPN to report on it, but there's been whispers. He's out. He's out of the game.
This is what we call careless whispers, George Michael syndrome. Personally, it makes me very horny, just like George Michael. I think there's some steam to it. From the injury list that we heard, it was fucking incredible. You know, it was you know, as long as my fucking arm. And so I'm sure there's a lot of back and forth. He might not even know. You know what I mean? I'm sure there's rumors swirling around his own camp that, you know, they can't really confirm or deny. I think
he doesn't know himself.
That's what I'm saying.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, man, we're going to find out with him.
And if they come up, it's probably because he's like, you know, let's say that you were thinking about retiring. I get drunk at a bar and I tell people like, yo, Joe's thinking about retiring.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
And then it just spreads.
It's a cool thing to know. You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't you want to show it off a little bit? Yeah. Especially when you're hot and all these people are in his entourage, you know.
He just had a great pay-per-view.
I'm sure he's got a lot of people hanging around. Everybody in Houston is messy drama queens. You know, these things happen.
If he retires now, does he have like a Tupac kind of swag to him? Like how Tupac was a famous rapper that after death became a way bigger deal, like a way more legendary figure. Do you think Spence's legacy becomes overblown after the accident?
Do I think he gets overrated like Tupac? By a certain class of people, it'll happen. You know what I mean? In kind of the same way that Nick Diaz, I feel like, is. Where people are like, oh, well, Nick Diaz was like the number one guy in the world. It's like, well, Nick was like the number seven guy in the world. And that's very impressive in its own right, but, you know, it is what it is. And so, yeah, there will be that class of people who's like, oh, the real guy was Errol Spence. But we're never going to know, you know? Maybe he could have been, but we're never going to know.
And no matter what happens, if he comes back, they will always blame the car accident.
Yes, he's never going to have a legitimate loss anymore. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's always going to be...
No one beat him in his prime.
One beat him when he's ready, right? It was, Ali before the draft, yeah. You know? Somebody else who had their career essentially ended, he's probably going to get picked up by Bellator, but, you know, he's been done for quite a while. Gilbert Melendez.
I can't believe it is a travesty. Gil Melendez is
former... 2-7 in the UFC. Just horrible.
Former Strike Force
champion. I called this when he got signed. I said he's never going to swim at the UFC level. He was a Strike Force regional San Jose level champion. He didn't have the skill to compete at the next level. And he got blown out in a lot of fights. And his biggest win was probably over Diego Sanchez? You know, in a fight where he still got rocked by Diego Sanchez's striking.
Yeah.
Come on. How dare you and try to portray yourself as a...
I feel like we got him at the end of his prime. He went through a lot of wars.
With mid-level guys. That's a problem.
He had the Shinya Aoki fights. He had the fight against
Masvidal. Okay, if you have a war against Shinya Aoki or a war against Jorge Masvidal in 2010. Actually, that Masvidal fight was very controlled, I remember. He controlled that a lot with his wrestling. He had a lot of difficult fights, but there was a lot of difficult, like, positional battles. I feel like when he got to the UFC, he was having, like, these, like, Roger Huerta-style battles that he was having to get drawn into that he didn't as much before. Maybe with, like, a Josh Thompson, he definitely did.
I felt like if the UFC had got him earlier, he would have been better off. But I felt like he stayed at that regional level once he got the Strikeforce. Because if you look at his, he was a rising star at the beginning of Pride. I mean, at the end of Pride. But the beginning of his, like, prospect career. He looked like he was going to be a big deal, but you rise to the level of your competition. You are who you surround yourself with. And when he went to Strikeforce instead of UFC, I felt like he stagnated.
Maybe. Call me Grumpy Gus. I just think he was... I don't think he ever had the skills. I don't think he ever had the toolkit to be able to really perform at the highest level. And then when he got in there with the highest level guys, he showed that. So I feel very vindicated. And people like to defend Gilbert Melendez. I never saw the sparkle.
Big shout out to Carrie Melendez. Very hot.
She is pretty
big
hot.
Fan.
She is pretty hot. And he has a pretty good analyst, for whatever that's worth. Yeah. He is a pretty decent analyst. A couple fight announcements. Devin Haney is going to take on Javier Fortuna, who is the mandatory to his WBC belt. That's pretty cool.
That's a good fight. Javier Fortuna, he was kind of like a Gilbert Melendez type guy, where he was a big star, well, like a big kind of spoken about boogeyman outside of the mainstream. Once he got his big fights, he didn't look necessarily that great, but he still looks gatekeeperish. So for a guy at the level of Devin Haney, who's looking to rise and be this big crossover star, this is a good fight to see where he is currently, because he looked awful in his previous fight.
I agree. This is a really good fight for Devin Haney. Even though it's a mandatory, I think it's the exact right kind of guy for him fighting in this moment. What's another fight that is coming up? David Benavidez is going to take on Yildirim, our boy Yildirim, in January. David Benavidez, one of the best super middleweights in the world. Man, let's see it.
It's another great fight with a young fighter against a skilled veteran. He should beat the shit out of Yildirim.
This is going to be the shit out of Yildirim.
Styles make fights, and it's going to be a highlight reel knockout. It's going to be crazy. Yildirim gave a lot of problems to our boy, the guy who had cancer.
Dave Jacobs. Dan Jacobs.
The other guy. He has a brother who fought against... Oh, my God. I'm drawing a blank. He just fought Benavidez. He's Smith. Durrell.
Anthony Durrell.
He gave Anthony Durrell a lot of issues stylistically, but I don't think Yildirim's that good. Yildirim, of course, also got destroyed by another fast, hard-punching fighter in Eubanks. And if Eubanks is beating you up, who's really a middleweight...
Yeah, who's really a middleweight, has not enough power to really, like, bang at this highest level, right? He is not able to throw his fat cat weight around at 168. If he can beat you down, you have some issues against David Benavidez.
He's going to destroy you.
David Benavidez, and this is not because they're both Mexican, is very much like a Kelvin Gastelum to me. You know what I mean? Where it's just like the pressure and the pace, and he looks like he should be a lot slower, and I feel like his opponents kind of fall into that. Like, why is this fat fuck beating me up? You know what I mean? Our boy Emmanuel Navarrete is fighting Horta in December. That's a good stay-busy fight. Yeah, it's a decent fight. And man, Maidana's returning. He's coming out of retirement in April. He must have retired
2014?
That sounds about right. He must have blown through all his Coke money by now. Yeah, that sounds about right. And he is going to be returning in April in what I'm sure is going to be a joke. And I bet somehow Golden Boy is going to be involved.
Man, Maidana was the embodiment of a fighter's fighter. He was the most disciplined. He was the most hardcore. No matter what happened, he was always in shape. He was one of those guys that always, you know, just went above and beyond, almost like a Spartan. But then he got that first Mayweather paycheck and just completely got out of shape and started partying.
Yeah, it turns out he was just poor. It turns out that whole time he was just a broke boy. And then as soon as he wasn't, he was a totally different guy.
And then he got that second Mayweather paycheck, and then they showed him, like, ringside at one of the fights. I didn't even recognize him. I was like, it's only been 6 months.
It's like he went through, like, a, like, reassignment surgery. It was that severe. He was just never the same guy. Yeah.
It's a lot of money when you fight Mayweather, but that's the biggest change. Like, he quit. Like, yeah. He could have still been a world champion, done a lot of big things.
He got fuck you money. That's what the dream is. That's what the gift that Mayweather gave him. Man, I'm looking at everything else from this week. This is a slow fight week.
Yeah.
Anything else for this week, Jesse?
No, that's it.
Man, this is one of our shortest episodes. Only like, we're less than 20 minutes in.
Leo Santa Cruz returns on the undercard of Deontay Wilder versus Luis Ortiz.
Leo Santa Cruz is a podcast favorite, man. I'm super excited to see him. It's going to be a non-competitive fight, but it's always good to see Leo Santa Cruz.
He's taken a long layoff, so it is like, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how he looks after that long layoff.
He's a guy who I would be afraid of falling into the Maidana trap, actually, now that we bring them up so close to each other. Because it's kind of, you know, everybody talks about, you know, he grew up and his house was literally getting like, you know, riddled with bullets and shit. And now he's growing up, he's matured, he's a world champion, and he's cashing a lot of checks that he had no business being around most of his life. And guys react differently to that. And so if Leo Santa Cruz was somebody who kind of evolved past fighting in kind of like a Rory McDonald kind of way, I wouldn't be the most shocked. There are guys that would shock me about, and he's not necessarily one. Guys that come from that kind of background. Nick Diaz is, I think, a lot like that. And I think he showed that in that Ariel Helwani interview, that he kind of evolved past needing to be a fighter. And he got other opportunities. And he was getting paid just to show up at club openings. And so, you know, his life changed. And he was no longer a poor kid from Stockton. Now he had the option not to fight, something he had never had before.
I mean, that is probably where Leo Santa Cruz is now, because one of his close friends is Al Haymon. They're not just working together. He's not just his advisor. He's as close with Al Haymon versus Ortiz. He's probably getting paid more than he did against some of his big wars that he had. His schedule between 2012 and 2017 was one of the busiest and hardest schedules I've ever seen in my life. It's prime
Kodo. I would like to brag about filibustering while you look this up.
But what I was going to say is that after that, 2017, after the rematch against Frampton, it's looked a little bit like soft touches. It's been a long time.
I mean, roll me through it.
So, for example, all right, so he has those wars with Frampton. He has
which were amazing fights. Oh, my God. Those were just action-packed, right?
And before that, he had fought in a prime Abner Mars in a big war.
That was really rough. Yo, that was rough. That was in the Staples Center, right?
Yeah, the Staples Center. Christian Mahares, the Manuel Roman fight, who was a big guy back in the day. He was an underdog against Victor Terraza. He had all these big, big fights. And then he goes Chris Avalos, who was a guy who was a good prospect, but never really
came up. I mean, he's not on that level.
Yeah. Mahares, but Mahares wasn't the Mahares from the first fight.
No, it's like fighting like Johnny Hendricks in 2016. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where it's like, okay, he's a tough guy, world champion, you know, but you know.
This guy doesn't have a Wikipedia page, not the best record. Rafael Rivera.
That's a stay busy.
Yeah, and then like he's almost taken most of the year off, and it's come. That was at the beginning of the year, and now he's fighting Manuel Flores. Not the
soft touches, like yeah. you said, soft touches. So when are we going to see him in with a tough guy again?
Now Manuel Flores, just so you have an idea who this guy is, he recently lost to Chris Avalos.
Holy shit! So bet the house is what you're saying.
So I mean, he could be on his way out. I mean, he had a very tough 5 years. This may be just his kind of last couple paychecks is cashing in before something bigger and better.
Let's see. But Leo Santa Cruz, for some of the action wars that he's had, hats off.
Yeah.
Anything else for the week?
That's it.
Man, let the people know.
Follow me on social media, Jay Rivas Comedy on Instagram and Jay Rivas on Facebook.
Find the show, follow the show, subscribe to the show, and we will be back next week here on the Fighter's Block.